driving. Hope comes and stops us in our tracks. Bravely we prove in our striving, trudging together each day. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Welcome everybody to Raw Recovery, a Trudging Together podcast. My name is Dion, and I bet you know that I'm an alcoholic by now. I also run a recovery podcast. We do meetings. We're doing detoxes, treatment centers. Gosh, we're so busy. We're so busy. But what's neat is we always get to come back to the podcast. We get to come back to the podcast, which is my favorite thing. Today, we have Sasa. Sasa, welcome to the show.
Ashe, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, I've known Sasa for about 72 hours now. well, you know, I have great intuition when it comes to picking speakers. I'm just good at it. And the way that I found Sasa is I was trolling Facebook, and she had put out a video about her recovery. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was genuine. A lot of times when people go live, they really, you knew what you were talking about. You were not passing on bad information, which means you've done the work. I can tell when somebody's done the work. And that's why I picked you. So great job on having the courage to put your story out there for everybody in the world to see and rip apart if they want to.
I'm grateful to have the story that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? With that, every story, and I want everybody to know this, it doesn't matter. Even if you think your story is boring, no, I want you on the show. If you don't have a chance to tell your story, we want you here. Because your story is unique. It is beautifully unique, maybe not terminally unique, but every story matters because we all go through something that's different. So with saying that, I'm going to wrap it up and hand the show over to Sasa. We all know this is not my show. This belongs to whoever the speaker is. So welcome to Raw Recovery. Sasa, the stage is yours.
Thank you, Dion. I deeply appreciate your invite onto your podcast.
Absolutely.
Like you said, over the last few days, I've been sharing more about my sobriety story. And The reason for that, honestly, came out of a position of kind of struggling. I am almost 3.5 years in to my recovery. And it really doesn't matter how many years that you have, life is still going to life, right?
Yep.
And so for me, that struggle has been more to the surface recently. And so It was important to me to just kind of get back to basics and listen to myself about where I was with my sobriety, and understanding deeply that if I wasn't working on my recovery, then I was probably working towards a relapse. And so
absolutely.
It just became important for me to do something healing and cathartic for myself, and in hopes that, you know, if that touches a heart or two, that's a wonderful outcome from that.
I know it reached me, and you are absolutely correct, because you are having a hard time, but you have a solid foundation. And sometimes all we have left in a day is steps 1, 2, and 3, and that's okay.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Absolutely. Just recognizing where you're at. So a little bit about me. Again, my name is Sasa and I'm an alcoholic. And I grew up in Aurora, Colorado.
Okay.
With a 2-parent household, my mom, Patricia, my dad, John, both of them with lots of experience, decades of experience in the AA program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. So I grew up in a house that had pictures of the Serenity Prayer everywhere and a big book always in some corner. And with that said, I still had to go through my own journey. One of the things that I've learned in recovery is that there is no one, nothing, and anything that can help you besides your higher power and your will to get sober. So even though I grew up with sober parents, that did not save me from my own journey with alcohol.
Correct. Yeah.
They were beautiful seeds planted over time that I think made it easier once the time came.
Yeah.
I was already familiar with some of the routes to get better.
Yeah. It didn't seem as scary and overwhelming because I knew where to go.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted help, I knew that all I had to do was reach out to AA and they would help me.
Exactly. And that was like the suggestion from my mom over time as I began to struggle with alcohol. I started drinking at age 15. It was one of those situations where you've got an older sibling who's willing to kind of bring you to the party.
Okay.
And so my older brother had invited me over to drink alcohol, and my first experience with it, well, I had a lot of trauma from ages 12 to 15.
Okay.
Through the passing of my father and subsequent loss of my mother emotionally. Her loss of her husband.
Yeah.
And so, there were, you know, lots of experiences that I was building up that was not good for a good future for myself.
Yeah.
And when I drank, all of that went away. Mm. And I walked to the mirror and I could almost see what was happening inside my body, where I was just seeing all of this pain and it just became numbness.
Yeah.
And in that moment, that was the best feeling I had felt in several years. Grief, I didn't like that. Anger, I didn't like that. Feeling unsure, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
But the numbness that came from drinking, I loved that.
Yeah.
And there became a very tight relationship with that liquid for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So after, you know, my first experience drinking, it didn't become that daily thing. So because I didn't match my stereotype in my head of what a alcoholic would look like, that just wasn't in my mind. So all my mom's warnings about, you know, alcohol is not good for our family. Alcoholism runs in our bloodline. You need to be careful with this stuff, right? And I just thought, you know, binging on the weekends, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not drinking every day, Mom.
Yeah.
I was being what I thought was a normal 18 to 21 year old person.
Sure. Well, and that's also the stage where they call it a phase.
Exactly. So
she's going through a phase right now. And sometimes I'm going to tell you, sometimes it is a phase.
Mm-hmm.
My first ex-wife, I met her in AA. She wasn't an alcoholic. She just got in trouble. I had to go to AA classes, but not an alcoholic. She definitely learned her lesson though.
Right.
She never drank and got in the car again.
And see, there's plenty of situations where when you're an alcoholic, you don't necessarily learn those lessons the first time.
Correct.
Disease is still there. So
that's
perfect, because what I noticed, or I rather didn't notice, is that I was different from other people who were drinking, that I was drinking with. Mm-hmm. I had a mental obsession that they did not have. I didn't understand what a mental obsession was. Mm-hmm. I just knew that even though I drank on Fridays and Saturdays, thinking about it was the rest of my entire week. Preparing to get it, planning, all of those things. And so after those first few experiences, you know, high school passed. I had a son at age 17.
Okay.
And after I graduated high school, it was a very slow moving derailing train. Next 20 years.
Did you graduate when you were pregnant then?
I did. So I had taken off a semester when I was a junior, when I was pregnant with my son.
Okay.
But before he was born, I returned back to school so that I could finish getting my diploma from the high school that I was already at.
Okay.
So I didn't go to an alternative school.
Yeah.
But yeah, so drinking just became like more and more and more. It became something where I was drinking when I was happy, when I was sad, when I was stressed, when I was angry. it just became what I did no matter what. Yeah. But I was still drinking with other people. So there wasn't this, like, you know, again, I didn't feel like I fit the stereotype yet. But that never lasts long when you struggle with alcohol, right? So it did become daily. It became morning to night. It became, I don't know how people don't smell me. I'm sure I smell like a distillery. It became,
that was just,
it became leaving work at lunch to go to the liquor store, get shooters, to go into the bathroom and enjoy some drinks to get through the rest of my day. It was a really alcohol friendly environment anyway. And so it was really easy to just, start at noon and continue through the day.
Five somewhere.
So it started to get scary at that point. I mean, that's when withdrawals began to happen. If I wasn't drinking, if I didn't have enough money, or there's just too much going on that I didn't re-up on my alcohol, then I was starting to experience heart palpitations and really uncomfortable, just beyond a hangover.
Do you mind if I ask how old you were at the time? Because you're a young lady.
Absolutely. Sure. So withdrawal started for me at age 31.
Okay. And the reason I bring that up is just to show that alcohol takes women a lot quicker. A lot quicker. So that's why I brought it up. Alcohol took me pretty quick too.
By age 31, I was just an absolute desperate mess. And so when that started, I called a friend. I was in one of my moments where I was really drunk and desperate and I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to be drinking, but I didn't know how to stop. Truly didn't. I had tried everything on my own, trying to change my habits, do it differently. And that just does not work. So I called a friend. And she had a friend who ran a recovery home. And so she called her and had her come get me. Yeah. So, you know, this woman comes into my house that's an absolute wreck, right? It's a depression house. I don't know if you've ever seen a depression house before, but that is absolutely what where I was. My home was an absolute wreck. I was surrounded by empty bottles and
dirty clothes, boxes, food. You can't do anything. You try, but you can't.
There was just no functioning at that point and a totally unmanageable life. And so I spent about 5 days at that recovery center because she wanted to help me with my withdrawals. Which was okay medically and things like that. So a few days into it, she wanted us to experience some outdoors. So there was another fellow housemate, me and the woman who ran the facility took us hiking. That was the most important seed planted through my entire recovery journey. Because my love for hiking, my love for nature, my love
for myself
in the outdoors has become a massive part of my prescription for sobriety. It's huge to me. And I love sharing that with everybody. I take folks hiking. I take folks outside to experience all of that. But that wasn't, of course, my last time dealing with alcohol. So after that, there were several more relapses until 2021. January of 2021 is when Sasa finally gets sober.
Oh, the psychic change.
Yes, I was finally tired of feeling like I was not going to wake up the next morning because my body was just completely beginning to give up on me. My human innate need to survive, something was not right with it. And so my will to live was beginning to go down, and I knew that that couldn't be right. So I don't know where I got it. And it frustrates me because it's so important part of my journey. But someone at some point gave me a book that made the AA program more palatable for me to try. I had my assumptions about what it was, and I wasn't very interested. Okay. Just being real. And so
when
someone gave me a book by Russell Brand, and I mean, I like the guy, but I just thought he was an actor,
comedian, just some dude running his mouth. Yeah, but he
actually knows what he's talking
about.
Who seemed to really love to run his mouth, but I'm grateful for it because
he rewrote
the 12 steps in a way that was much more palatable to me in his book, Recovery, Freedom from Our Addictions. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on this show, but
I wouldn't fucking worry about it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So anyway, he wrote the 12 steps in a manner that just made it more palatable to me.
Yeah. And he makes it kind of fun too.
Yeah. It's hilarious. It's concise. Yeah. And I felt like it was the most clear way of explaining the steps, you know?
Yeah. Let's hear him. I've read him before. Let's get
this to it. Cursing. Yeah. So just to, after I read that book, cover to cover, one of the only books as an adult that I have read cover to cover. And I went to a meeting. It was a 3 p.m. How It Works meeting in Denver, Colorado.
At York Street.
And at York Street Club, yeah, which is
where I run that meeting.
Yeah, that's where
the online one I help run, actually.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. So I may have met you at a different part of the journey.
Yep.
But yeah, so when you come into AA, you get your suggestions, which are really just do this so that you can get better. And so I went to my 90 and 90, got a sponsor, and have been sober ever since. But that is because the power of the program, the power of my higher power, and all of those beautiful seeds planted over time.
Yeah. Wow.
So I am sitting in deep gratitude for the gifts of sobriety today. If it were not for sobriety, I would not have helped myself out of homelessness, helped myself out of poverty, helped myself out of difficult parenting relationships, and 16 passport stamps in 3 years.
Somebody tried to escape.
Yeah, trying to make some moves out here in this world. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, sometimes us moving, sometimes it can help. But, I mean, really, when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter where you're at. You know, I've met a lot of people in this program, many of them homeless, and they're sober. They're in recovery. Mm-hmm. They go to meetings. They sleep in their car. Now, you know, obviously, they'd have a better chance of staying sober if they didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But there really are no excuses to not get sober. You know, I would tell people, yeah, I would die for my kids. Mm-hmm. And then somebody came along and said, yeah, but would you get well for them? I had to shut my mouth.
That is absolutely beautiful. I say that all the time. It's been one of those quotes that kind of icks me a little bit when people say I would die for you. Because I really do. I want you to live for me.
Yeah.
I wish that when you have this disease, that the thought of your kids and the thought of your life and the thought of your success would be the thing that would do it.
Yeah.
If that were the case, I think a lot more of us would be sober faster. But I am definitely grateful for the years that I've had and the ability to kind of help repair those relationships too.
Yeah. And to be, and now we can be available, you know, you know, it took me a little while before my kids came back. But what I did is I just became, you know, a better person each day. Mm-hmm. And as I started culminating those days, they saw what it is that I was doing.
Exactly. I just recently, maybe the other day, saw a video talking about how it takes about 2 years of changed behavior.
Yeah.
People's nervous systems to be able to regulate enough to trust you and to think
absolutely
that things are gonna be okay. So it was definitely a process the first couple years with my kids, family, friends, just waiting to see how long is this gonna last? Is she gonna be able to
do this?
Is she gonna be able to come into her higher self? So yeah. I'm glad for people who stuck around.
and you can't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I mean, it must be torture to have to live with an alcoholic. Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that come with our denial is we don't think that we're hurting other people. I think that's the biggest denial. And I have found that when an alcoholic finds out that they are hurting their mommy, when they're hurting their favorite auntie or their children, they might stop.
Yeah.
Sober is different than recovery in my book. I feel you can get sober for any reason that you want, but I'm going to have to do the program for myself. But I didn't love me when I got here, so how was I going to do it for myself?
Yeah.
So I waited. I let other people love. I just put myself in the herd, and I let other people love me until I could do it myself. And then when I could do it myself, I was able to really do the program.
I love that. I think that that's very similar to my journey. I had some amazing people that were supportive while I wasn't quite sure yet. I didn't know the answer. I didn't know where I was going to end up. So yeah, leaning on God and leaning on the beautiful support system that I had. I understand that so much of the time with recovery and alcoholism that you don't always have support. Sometimes you're very, very isolated and very, very alone, trying to do those things, but there's only one or two steps of the program that you have to do on your own. And then everything else is about being in communion with spirit and others. So,
yeah, the fellowship, you know, and fellowship, you know, because AA is not necessarily the only way. It's just the way that I've gone. But for anybody, finding fellowship, you know, create that circle that you crave. And you do that by going to meetings and meeting other people, opening your mouth, letting other people get to know you. Being accountable, I think, is huge.
Absolutely. I think it's important. Accountability
kept me sober.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important too that people understand that meetings aren't the only way to meet sober community too.
Right.
I think, like the resources that are really available to meet people that aren't necessarily in AA or NA or MA or whatever A, there are options for people to create community and sobriety. And so another big part of my sobriety prescription, I call it, is my workouts at the Phoenix Recovery. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of them before, but they are.
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with the Phoenix
Recovery. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I love Phoenix.
They're about two blocks away from the Phoenix Concept, which is a halfway house for homeless alcoholics. And I'm an alumni there from 1989. In fact, those plaques up there I made when I was 19.
Oh, that's wonderful.
My girlfriend kept them. She's my wife now. But I made those when I was 19. You know, the Phoenix workout place, I love them. And I'm going to tell you now, I'm not a huge supporter on bullshit and recovery.
Yeah.
Like axe throwing and this other sober living crap that's going on. But the Phoenix is awesome. Because they stay in their lane. And that's what I love about them. And it's a safe place for people in the program.
Absolutely. And there's just so many options. So if one thing isn't your thing, then, you know,
they have a shit ton of events.
Yeah. And it's not just physical activity anymore. It used to be really based on gym workouts.
Yeah.
Climbing, hiking.
They do a lot of mental stuff now, too.
Yes, and they do.
Yeah. And picnics and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a workout person, but I go to the picnic. Yeah. I'm going to show up at the gym.
Right. And they even have like a music program now you can learn.
Yeah.
To,
yeah. Like, and I like how and they're doing a very good job of it. And I like them because they haven't gotten too big for their britches and they're community based.
They really are. I've enjoyed everything I've done there.
And they don't think that they're the alpha omega. In other words, if you need help and it needs to be outside, they will help you find it. That's what I love about them. That is recovery equity. Yay.
Yay. Yeah. So that big plug to Phoenix.
Yeah. That means everybody gets what they need. Part of the problem right now is everybody gets everything. And when that happens, nobody gets anything.
I agree. So
it's about our needs and our wants. You know, Do you feel like your needs are different than your wants nowadays?
Oh, absolutely. The older that I get, like, I'm starting to understand that a lot of what I thought I needed, I didn't. And a lot of what I do need, I had no idea. So,
yeah, that we find out that a new fridge is more important than new rims.
Priorities change.
We get excited when we get a new oven. I know.
Well, I mean, just that in recovery, the difference in what I'm able to provide to my children and myself with experiences is totally different now that that huge portion of income isn't going toward my addiction. It can go toward recovery.
Yeah. And since we're not laying around in bed all day with hangovers, mm-hmm. we can do things like podcast.
Exactly.
Like take the kids out and go jump on the trampoline.
Exactly.
You know, the biggest part of my recovery is having my kids and my grandkids. You know, I've got 5 grandchildren and, you know, I'm at the age, you know, I'm a little bit older where, you know, I have a lot of insight and experience. And I just want to give it all away at this point.
Absolutely.
You know? 'Cause I know I love it so much that I know that if I continue to give it away, it'll come back to me. Tenfold.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. You can't keep it if you don't give it away. And so I guess that's an area of the program where I felt like I was lacking for so long.
Because
I did have difficulty. Social anxiety was huge for me. So meeting friends and like.
Okay. Because I was going to ask you, what was the hardest part of the program for you?
Absolutely. Being in community. Like, wanting to be vulnerable and open up and being too nervous to talk and not knowing that, you know, I had anything important or valuable to say.
Yeah.
So I just stayed silent and I went to the meetings and then I left the meetings and I went home and my sponsor was really the only person I spoke to for a long time until I started to learn that I was doing myself and the other folks in the meeting a disservice by not saying anything.
By not sharing your experience drinking.
Exactly. That's,
you know, I told my sponsor once, I said, you know, I'm going to go to meetings and I'm just going to listen. Mm-hmm. And he turns to me and says, the fuck you are.
It's fucking selfish. Said, I mean, really.
He said, if you ain't going, that he's like, if you're not going to talk, don't bother going.
Yeah, exactly.
You're there to help the newcomer with your experience, strength, and all. Absolutely. Otherwise, don't bother. Don't quit wasting their time.
The newcomers and the old timers. I hear constantly from old timers telling me like your new recovery is keeping me sober at year 25 or year 30.
Yeah.
You help me remember what that experience was like.
It doesn't work out there. Mm-mm. It really doesn't. I'm kind of seeing a correlation between something. So when I was about 2.5 years sober, I had my first anxiety attack and then they diagnosed me with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why I started going live. I couldn't get out of the house. I couldn't go to meetings. So I'm like, I need to do something. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going through something. Why don't I go online and explain it to people? Because I know I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. And that's how I start. First time I came on here, my PTSD was full blown 5 years ago. I'm like, and you couldn't hear me stuttering. I mean, it was, I want to say it was horrible, but that's how I got started. Mm-hmm. And then I started creating connection and then Corona happened.
Yeah.
And you all came into my world and then you found out what I go through.
Yeah.
So I spent the next year teaching people how not to kill themselves, literally, mm-hmm. and not drink while they're at home. 'Cause I knew how to do that. So it's like God set me up for this whole Corona thing. But what I like to say about that is we're all full of snakes and there's one of two ways to do this. You can either grab that 4-step and reach down there, grab those snakes, bring them out into light of day and say, this is what I am. Or you can wait for the trauma to happen when you're 43 and go with the PTSD. Those are your options, but you are not going to get away with it.
Absolutely. And mental health definitely is a struggle, especially if you've got addiction and then you've got that dual issue of mental health stuff, like that damages even and more. So it felt like when I got sober that I was getting sober at age 15, that I was 15 again, that I was going to have to learn emotionally from that point on because I missed so much. In those times of drinking. So
yeah, well, when you drink, you're emotionally stunted. So you're exactly right. Yeah. So you were emotionally 15 until you were 30, until now. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call emotional sobriety in the program. Understanding that our emotions are our own responsibility.
Absolutely.
My triggers are my own responsibility. My PTSD, my anxiety, and my depression are mine. And people do not need to behave a certain way because I am around. That is manipulation.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think it's important to take care of much as you can when it comes to your mental health when you get sober, because there is nothing worse than being sober and still having all of those emotional maladies and spiritual maladies and all of that going on. So for me, the emotional work has been important, because I would just be a hot mess, dry drunk, unless I were to really, really, really try to do the work. And of course, the 12 steps has been impactful, but I've also done my share of shadow integration work for myself to really piece out that inner child and do
it. Well, you kind of, I know what you're talking about. Not everybody knows what shadow integration is. Will you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So we all have our experiences and our triggers, right? But there's always a root to that. There is a root experience that likely happened to you at some point between 0 and 7 years old. And so shadow work really takes those parts of you that you may have shame around or fear around or not like about yourself or judge, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
You take those things, you get to the root of that experience, where it started. And then you begin to reprocess those things so that you can clear that inner child of that trauma in hopes that you as an adult can be more accepting of all the parts of yourself.
Yep.
And that work has been tremendous for me because I came to sobriety hating myself, hating myself, hating absolutely everyone else too. And without learning what you fear and why you fear it, getting familiar with your patterns, you won't go too far. So that was what I did.
Yeah, those are some great points. And thank you for explaining that. We were talking about self-acceptance in a meeting the other day, and you know, you can't do much on self-acceptance until you know who you are, and that's where that fourth and fifth step. And what you're talking about comes in. We have to find out the causes and conditions.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll use my mom as an example. And I love my mom. Everybody knows that. So, right. But with me, the cause and condition was she treated me differently than the other children. That was the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem wasn't that she put me away here. It isn't because of what she said here or did here. The actual problem was I felt like she treated me differently.
Mm.
And once I found that out, then I could figure out what I had to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I could see, oh, my mom did the best she could with a child who wouldn't fucking listen.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what did we do that our mom was, feeling how she was feeling? Well,
if I look back, because with what you brought up, what it does, it shows us that we are born with this disease. Okay. You had no choice. Mm-hmm. And you said it, you didn't have a choice. Even though your mom and dad were both in the program, which actually ended up saving your life eventually, you were still not going to avoid the pitfalls of being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And the reason is because you were chosen by God.
Absolutely. And if that's the experience that is supposed to be part of my purpose to ultimately get to my higher self, then again, like I said, it's a story I'm grateful for.
That's all it. Parts of it. Yeah. Well, you know, we feel like our past is just blah, but it's cold.
Yeah.
Your experience, strength, and hope can not only save the life of an alcoholic, but you can reform whole families again. So when people say, why am I an alcoholic? That's my answer, because you can help when no one else can. That's why.
Yeah.
I feel, if that's not a good enough why, then you're in the wrong program.
Exactly. I often feel like it's been somewhat on my shoulders to repair some of the generational curses that have gone through my family. And so I take the job very seriously, but it's a lot. It's a heavy, heavy job to understand that you got to fix some stuff for your grandma, your great grandma, down to your great, great grandchildren.
It's a responsibility.
Yeah.
When you're chosen, it comes with a lot of responsibility. And that's why I take that responsibility statement very seriously.
Yes.
I will help anybody that comes along, because, you know, before when I was, you know, when I was a drug and alcohol counselor, it was one in every 10 families was affected by drugs and alcohol. But with the opiate crisis, everybody, there isn't a family, you can talk to anybody, they know somebody that has died from fentanyl or has overdosed or has died from alcoholism.
Yeah, it's been a massive issue in Denver and across the country. And it's a really sad condition, but I believe in the power of recovery and sobriety.
Me too.
So always people in active addiction are in my prayers.
Absolutely. Yep. And I will do anything that I can. I will meet you where you are at. I will not expect you to meet me where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Before we wrap up, do you have any words of wisdom? And before we go, anything that you utilize that you want to say?
Sure. Actually, one popped up in my head immediately. That's related to the nervousness I may have felt around coming on the show. And that's if you're scared, do it anyway.
Yeah.
So, yep, that's my piece of advice for the day. Do it anyway.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to do what I call this Jerry Springer portion of my show, where I kind of wrap things up. I'd like to end on courage, because there has been a lot of courage here today to come on here and to tell your story with somebody that you don't really know takes courage. And where does courage come from? Courage for me comes from trust. I have found that my higher power has a love language, and that love language is trust. And the more I trust my higher power, the more courage I have, the more I'm able to walk through my fears. That's what I got. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I love you.
Thank you so much.
Have a day. Bye-bye.